I actually used my Latina-ness as my superpower. 16 years ago, when I graduated from college, I knew that the only thing that would differentiate me from everyone else in the room 16 years ago was the fact that I spoke Spanish and that I knew how to tie that organization to another community. And that was the Spanish-speaking community. And I knew that that translated to extra sales or more recruiting or additional education to our growing population. It's all about self-worth. It's all about authenticity. It's all about knowing your value and also learning to be confident. A lot of women perhaps aren't confident in bringing their full selves, their full Latina-ness or their full women of colorness to the boardroom. It takes a lot of learning to be able to understand how to adapt and bring those skills to the table.
You just heard from Jai Vargas, a LinkedIn ninja that absolutely loves to use technology to connect with others, as well as a community builder, specifically for Latinas and women of color. Hi, I'm Celeste Headley. Welcome to Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. This podcast brings you conversations with some of the most brilliant minds, offering invaluable advice and some inspiration that might help you navigate your life, both in your career and at home. How should you think about building a strong personal brand in this new environment of COVID-19? Jai Vargas, branding guru and founder and CEO of The Latinista, offers actionable ways to create an engaging elevator pitch, have a strong presence on Zoom, effectively self-promote and forge powerful relationships so you can accurately convey your unique value to your advantage right now. So, let's get started. I guess maybe a good place to start is to ask you, what is your brand, you personally?
Well, I have many brands. I am what they call a multi-passionate, multi-hyphenate. And so I've got experience in advertising and marketing, but I see myself as a diversity and inclusion consultant and specialist, a LinkedIn ninja that absolutely loves to use technology to connect with others, as well as a community builder, specifically for Latinas and women of color.
This struck me because there's so many people who wear many different hats. We live in a hustle culture. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of people end up having multiple brands. And I wonder how you juggle those or how you would advise others to choose what brand to use on what platform in what setting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We are all multi-passionate and multi-hyphenates. I think the challenge comes when you try to figure out your elevator pitch. And it's of utmost importance to understand first and foremost who your audience is. And so in the situation of us being at a conference, and let's say I'm promoting my executive coaching programs, I'm going to focus my elevator pitch completely around what it is that I'm focused on for that particular conference, right? So not that it's not relevant that I'm also a Zumba instructor, or I love to bake, or I love numbers. But really, what it is it that I'm focused on when speaking to you at this particular conference? It always depends on who your audience is.
So you mentioned you're a LinkedIn ninja. Is that your favorite tool for marketing and branding? You have two different accounts, right? On LinkedIn, you have the profile for Latinista and then for LinkedIn Ninja. So what is it that you liked about LinkedIn? And do you think that's the most effective platform for branding and marketing?
Absolutely. LinkedIn is my favorite because it lets you learn so much about a person's career trajectory immediately. I mean, think about it. You can't do this on any other platform. When you interact with someone on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook, for the most part, you really have no idea where they work or what they do. And when it comes to marketing myself, I use others as well, such as Instagram. Particularly for me, because I'm a millennial, other like-minded millennials immediately look me up on Instagram. So what I like to do is make sure that I have a consistent brand on all of the platforms. It's absolutely exhausting. And so I have a presence on LinkedIn, on Facebook, on Meetup, on Instagram, on Twitter. I mean, the list goes on and on. But for the type of work that I do, I choose to stay on LinkedIn the most because it's the most professional way that I can get to know a connection instead of saying, okay, this person just commented on my Instagram post. Where do they work? What do they do? Can they afford my services? I don't know that by their Instagram profile.
There's so much to unpack in what you're talking about. So let me go back sort of step by step. Mm-hmm. You were talking about the difference between interacting online versus at a conference. And certainly this year, how much in-person contact we get has changed drastically. So how do you use a digital platform for sort of fill in the blanks when you're not able to meet people in person or make perhaps surprising connections with people that you wouldn't think would be helpful to you or a possible client, and therefore you wouldn't go searching for them?
Yes, I love that. Networking is absolutely critical in creating one's brand. I mean, when you think about it, when you meet someone, we all know it takes just a matter of few moments to start forming an idea of who they are and creating that first impression about that person. And so when you meet someone, they start putting together all of these pieces of what may make you, you. So now that we only have the ability to express our personality in the current state of virtual world during COVID, we need to deepen the technology use. And so we're relying heavily on video calls, or what I like to call passive impressions, like a LinkedIn profile. It's so important to be able to reach out to individuals that you see yourself emulating in the future. I mean, about 11 years ago, when I was transitioning careers, I thought to myself, one day I want to become a chief marketing officer or a chief diversity officer. And so if I want to be that one day, naturally, the people that I'm connecting with on LinkedIn or anywhere at a networking event should really be those people that embody that position already. And so I started reaching out to those individuals that held that title within the Fortune 100. So I opened up an Excel list. I started writing down every single company on the Fortune 100 list, everything from Amazon to Xerox. The second column would be their name. The third column is their title. The fourth column is when I reached out. And then the fifth column is, did they ever reply? And when? And what did they say? And then I gave them the opportunity to either email with me, video call with me, or maybe set up a call. Or if they had the time, I would literally bring them coffee. I did this about 11 years ago now. And out of the 100, I met 33 chief diversity or chief marketing officers.
Wow.
Yeah. So not a bad percentage, right? I was like blown away.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah. And so it was really wonderful. I asked them about their career trajectory. I obviously asked them if they were hiring. And then I asked them to connect me with someone else that they knew would be pivotal to my career success in wanting to be a chief marketing officer. And they would always say, oh, yeah, meet my boy, you know, Bob, who runs marketing at Bloomberg. And so then I'd meet Bob the next week. But that is so important. And the challenge there for a lot of people is that they're uncomfortable reaching out to these individuals who are, quote unquote, so much more successful than they are. And that's one of the challenges that I try to help people through when they're trying to become a little bit more successful in their own career trajectory.
And it's become a little bit complicated, right? Because so many people are using Zoom calls and Zoom conferences. I cannot even believe the number of awkward moments that have been described on Twitter and social media from someone who put a meme as their background and their boss wrote them a private email saying, please don't do that again, to someone who dressed up in a full suit to talk to another person. And when the other person got on camera, they were in shorts and a t-shirt. So how do we sort of navigate? How do we keep our branding consistent or professional and yet make it look like we're not, I guess, taking it too seriously? How do we sort of keep this balance?
Yeah, it's a really big challenge. I think it also depends on the brand and the organization you're representing. I mean, yesterday I was on a webinar and some of the heads of LinkedIn, Slack, Trello, and HubSpot were speaking. And they were all pretty casual, but they're executives. And so they had makeup on and their hair was done, right? Because it's how they carry themselves, particularly when it comes to executive presence as well. I mean, there are some individuals like CEOs that could probably be in pajamas and they've earned their stripes. They can wear whatever the heck they want to wear because they actually have the experience to back up their knowledge. I think it is quite tricky to navigate, perhaps when you're interviewing over video. You're like, do I put on that suit or can I just put on a blouse? Do I have to wear makeup? I think it's really important that you understand what your brand should say about you, but don't take it to the extreme, right? Perhaps wearing a suit every single day is probably not something that you have to do. Or maybe you're in front of a bunch of investors and it's probably appropriate. Or maybe take the tie off. Or perhaps for women, all you have to do is just throw on some really beautiful lipstick and comb your hair and you're fine, right? Because your words will speak for themselves.
One hopes, although we have seen a number of video captures of things going on in the background that probably they never wanted to show to the world. It sounds like over time, your brand evolved. Is that fair?
Absolutely. So my brand has evolved quite a bit. I started, for example, on Facebook years and years ago. And then I quickly started networking with individuals in my professional space. And I realized that I didn't necessarily want those people that were attending galas interacting with my personal friends. And so I started to say, there must be a better way for me to keep these people in my network together, but separate from my personal life. So what I did was I opened up a more professional Facebook, but then it became too complicated to manage both personal and professional Facebooks. So then I said, okay, I've got to start shifting my energy to a more efficient professional platform, which is when I started working on LinkedIn. And so I've been on LinkedIn for 11 years now, and it's where I keep all of my professional and personal connections, but you'll never see me posting anything personal on LinkedIn. And so the way that I started working on LinkedIn is I simply started like everyone else does, simply copying and pasting my resume. But then I quickly learned that I needed to also add everything else that I was passionate about and creating, right? So 8 years ago, I started my side hustle, which was the Latinista, a networking group that I started for Latinas and women of color. And I also wanted to include all of the volunteering that I was doing on LinkedIn. And so I knew really quickly that that's what was going to separate me from every other marketer and advertiser out there on LinkedIn. So as my career started progressing and I started to have to interview more, I started saying, how am I going to separate myself from every other marketer? Well, it's the side hustles, it's the volunteering, it's the connections, it's the articles that I'm posting. And so yeah, my brand has definitely evolved over time. And when you think about it, I do a pretty diverse slate of offerings, right? And so I'm a LinkedIn ninja. I coach people individually as well as host workshops. I also do diversity and inclusion corporate training. I also run the Latinista, which is my networking group for career trajectory for Latinas and women of color. And I also do a ton of mentoring for the city of New York and New Jersey. And so that's a lot of really different work, but it all makes sense when you start developing and evolving that story. And so really the gist of it is understanding how to write that story on LinkedIn so that it translates as simply as when you meet someone. They're like, oh, that makes sense. I can see how that's evolved for you. Tell me more. And so yeah, my brand has definitely evolved over time.
We're going to take a break for just one moment and we will be right back.
Tune into The Fix, a weekly podcast with me, your host, Michelle King, where I share the latest stories, research, and insights from interviews with celebrities, academics, thought leaders, business executives, and world leaders about how they're innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. You can get your fix from iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, or at thefixpodcast.org, or wherever you get yours. Don't miss out. Tune into The Fix today.
You're listening to A Conversation with Jai Vargas, multicultural marketing expert, LinkedIn ninja, and the Latinista. We've got our first conference of the season coming up in just a few weeks, and you can still get a ticket for the 2020 virtual Texas Conference for Women. It will be held entirely online on October 1st at texasconferenceforwomen.org. You will hear from some brilliant and inspiring women, game changers like Melinda Gates and Issa Rae, and many more leaders, thinkers, writers. All of them can help you in your career, yes, even now, and in your personal life. And I hope that you'll log on because I will be emceeing. I hope to see you there. It's a super exciting event, and you will be thrilled if you're able to participate. Tickets for the virtual Pennsylvania and Massachusetts conferences for women are all now on sale. So if you would like an opportunity to attend one of these virtual conferences for free, we have this special offer for listeners of this podcast. Go to conferencesforwomen.org/survey, and you can take our short listener survey there and make sure to enter your email at the end. It's conferencesforwomen.org/survey, and then you might win free tickets. While you're there at conferencesforwomen.org, click on podcast in the menu, and you'll find notes and transcripts for this episode and for every episode. Now, let's get back to the conversation. I want to ask questions about being not just a woman, but a woman of color. And I want to be as plain spoken as I possibly can, because there are some realities and then there are possibilities, right? So the realities are that women are heard less and more likely to be thought badly of when they talk too much, when they assert themselves, when they bring up ideas in meetings, they're less likely to be heard. And women of color, especially, there's studies that show that if you have a meeting with a diverse people, the things that are said by a woman of color are least likely to be remembered. So how do you make your voice heard through your branding or your networking without coming up against these biases that will make an assertive woman and an assertive woman of color seem loud?
That is a challenge that women of color have experienced for a very long time.
Yeah.
It's interesting, when I was in corporate America, I spent about 15 to 16 years there. I actually used my Latina-ness as my superpower. And so a lot of people actually would see that as me being the token Latina that corporate America was using as a prop. But for me, I mean, it opened up incredible doors to be able to sit next to and create programs with executives and the CEO of those companies that I was working at. And so it really isn't how that and how you use that superpower. For me, it really is one of the ways in which I chose to brand myself. 16 years ago, when I graduated from college, I knew that the only thing that would differentiate me from everyone else in the room 16 years ago was the fact that I spoke Spanish, and that I knew how to tie that organization to another community. And that was the Spanish-speaking community. And I knew that that translated to extra sales or more recruiting or additional education to our growing population. It's all about self-worth. It's all about authenticity. It's all about knowing your value and also learning to be confident. A lot of women perhaps aren't confident in bringing their full selves, their full Latina-ness or their full women of colorness to the boardroom. It takes a lot of learning to be able to understand how to adapt and bring those skills to the table, and really embracing your experience and your diverse culture. Because when you understand how to use your experiences and your upbringing and your diversity to help that company's ROI and that bottom line, that's really when you become empowered. And you're like, wow, I can open up an entirely new scenario and business strategy and community and sales and recruiting and education for this CEO or for this organization. It's powerful. But absolutely, there are so many challenges that we face just walking in the door and not being seen or heard within corporate America.
And there's other, this is something I've experienced in person. There's also a danger to a certain extent, because as soon as I identified and played up my identity as a mixed race person, then I was being assigned stories that were about race, and I was being sent to events that were about race and gender. And I wonder if there's ever a reason to leave that out of your branding so that you do not get pigeonholed.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a personal preference. I always used that to my advantage. I always said, I'll take those stories. I'm going to sit next to the CEO. I'm going to create an entirely new department. I'm going to be the one that's penning and authoring those specific stories and tying it to the bottom line. But there are so many women that I've interacted with that are women of color, that are Latinas, that say, I don't want to be labeled. I just want to be here working as a woman, looking for mentors and sponsors and champions to help me move up the ladder. And I don't want them to look at me as a woman of color. That shouldn't define me. That doesn't make me any different than anyone else here. I don't want anyone thinking differently of me. I just want to be seen as equal. And I've heard that a ton of times, but it really is a personal preference.
Were you always good at self-promotion, or was it something that you had to teach yourself? In which case, do you have any tips for people who feel uncomfortable promoting themselves or feel that when they do that, they sound like they're bragging?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. Growing up as a Latina, an immigrant to this country, I was always taught to be very humble, to be grateful that I have a job, to just keep my head down, work really hard, and someone's going to notice me and I'll eventually get a raise and a promotion. Well, it doesn't necessarily work that way in corporate America, as I found out.
Nope.
And so you had to keep reminding your boss about everything that you've been accomplishing throughout the year. Because at the end of the year, when your evaluation time comes up, your manager is probably managing 10 or 15 others. They probably don't know all of the programs in which you've run and excelled at. And so I started taking a tally of everything that I was accomplishing every single month. So at the end of the year,
you literally kept like a document?
Literally. And you know what? It was actually my organization was doing a development plan. So we were actually being asked to fill out that development plan every single quarter. Because our bonuses were actually tied to it. And then our managers had to actually grade us. The first time I got a pretty bad grade because I probably forgot everything that I had accomplished that year. And so I learned from it. And then I started documenting every single thing that I was accomplishing. And by the end of that year, right, you present all of your experience and your accomplishment, your manager can't really say that you haven't accomplished much. And so I literally started documenting everything that I was doing. And when it comes to self-promotion online, I always say it's not about boasting when you're posting. You don't want to be bragging. That's the worst thing that you can do. I actually delete people from my LinkedIn that brag about themselves because I hate it. I hate people that just embody that. And so really what I think the key to self-promotion is, it's actually promoting other people. So for example, I do diversity workshops for corporations, right? And so instead of me posting a picture saying, woohoo, look at me, I got a really great new client here on Wall Street. Instead, what I do is I would post a picture of that client and that team, and I say what I love about working with them and what's so special about the work that they're now investing in by working with me. So by way of me promoting them and their team and the programs they're running, I'm kind of also promoting myself, just not in a flashy way. It's about them, not me. And so I always talk to people about promoting a nonprofit organization as well, right? So you're at a big fancy gala. You're not going to say, hey, look at me. I'm at Cipriani drinking Bellinis. Woohoo. You're like, I'm at this nonprofit's gala. This is the CEO who started the organization. This is how you can donate. And here's the mission and vision. Please click the link to donate or connect with the founder, right? So I'm talking about the organization, but it's still a picture of me at the gala. So it's certainly about other people and not about you. That's how I like to lead.
You're talking about all the different things that you do and all the different hats that you wear. How do you balance the multifaceted nature of everyone's passions and interests with the desire to become an expert in their particular subject? How do you do that, especially online?
Yes, online, it's actually quite a bit of a balance. It's interesting because I've met so many individuals in the past at networking events, and they're like, hi, I'm a motivational speaker and I love to empower women and I'm also a baker. And I'm like, wow, this person sounds phenomenal. And then I go home, I'll look them up on LinkedIn, and then I'm like, wow, this woman is an administrator at a hospital and she's a nurse. I'm so confused. This isn't the same person that I met, right? And so some people lead with what they're passionate about. But then when you start to look up their professional profiles, you start to understand that they're not really being their most authentic self online. And it's actually quite complicated to be able to do that. A lot of people still think that LinkedIn is quote unquote only to put your most professional foot forward. That means that you should only be putting information on there about your full-time job, not about what you're actually passionate about. That is totally wrong. You should be your most authentic self, which actually means, yes, put your full-time job on there, but also put the fact that you're a baker and that you teach Zumba lessons, and try to tell people the story of why you're passionate about all of these different things. And most importantly, how you want to interact with others on LinkedIn in the future, right? So when I come onto your LinkedIn profile, I want to be able to help you in some way. So you've got to literally tell me, I'm a nurse. I love motivating women. I've started a group. Please send professional women my way. But if I get onto your profile and I'm like, okay, she's a nurse. Now what? The conversation kind of stops there. So you've got to help me. What's your call to action? So that when I land on there, I'm like, I'm going to start referring people to her immediately.
How does your encouragement to people to use authentic storytelling balance with telling too much or cleaning up your profile and making sure you're not revealing things that may discredit you or I guess not make you look great? How is that a part of authentic storytelling that you talk about?
Yes. And you know what? That is actually a really big challenge. I have a number of clients that love to talk about politics.
Yeah.
And their number one question is, Jai, is it okay for me to post my political views and opinions on LinkedIn? I'm like, well, to tell you the truth, if this is something that you do, that you're writing articles and growing communities, then absolutely. I mean, if this is a way in which you make money, then yes. If this is something that's really personal to you, absolutely. Because you're going to start to gather a community of people that are connected to you that are like-minded, right? And so you've probably experienced it as well, where voting season comes around and then you start to wonder who your true friends are. And then you say, should I keep this person on or no? Right? And you make that decision. And so my complete network on LinkedIn is full of advertisers and marketers and diversity people and people with a lot of different experience when it comes to the diversity and inclusion space. And some individuals like to post about their political affiliations or opinions. But then it's up to me to say, you know what? Am I like-minded in that way? No, I'm going to delete them. End of story. And so, yes, you can absolutely post too much, and that's not a good thing. So there's a strategic balance of what you should post and what you shouldn't post. I always say, never post anything personal about your children, what school they go to. Don't post pictures of your house, of your car, with your license plate. It is not the right time in the world of technology to be giving information like that to the world.
So before we go, can you kind of give us a brief characterization of what each platform could be used for? I mean, I feel like you've been very clear about how you can use LinkedIn, but I'm wondering about the other platforms. For example, what is my best way to use Instagram for branding?
Yes. I think Instagram is important to anyone depending on what type of story you're trying to tell. And so, for example, if you're a photographer, Instagram is probably going to be your social media platform of choice because it focuses on beautiful pictures and articulating stories. I actually was an early adopter of Instagram. Most people use Instagram for personal reasons. I use it, yes, in a personal sense, but you'll never see a picture of food on my Instagram because I think that's absolutely ridiculous. I like to have a really consistent brand. And so I focus my Instagram posts about the different conferences that I attend, like conferences for women. I'll post about the different panels that I heard. I'll post about the different women and individuals that I learned from that day. And I'll post about all of my travels and all of the type of work that I'm doing. And yeah, every once in a while, I'll start to sprinkle in pictures of my friends and maybe my family. But for the most part, Instagram is really used to take a deeper, more creative look to your brand. Facebook is completely personal. That's solely for friends and family. There you can post a bunch of silly pictures of what you're eating and outfit of the day, right? It's just personal. Pinterest has actually upped its game tremendously by being an incredible lead generator. I have a client of mine who makes wreaths for doors for a living, and her business has skyrocketed because there are so many creative and crafty people looking for pictures on Pinterest. So Pinterest is definitely for people who are also on Etsy. So many different platforms. It's absolutely exhausting to stay on top of all of them. That's why I choose one and go deep. And for me, since I'm looking to do work with professionals, it's always about LinkedIn.
Last question for you. How do you break away and make sure that you have time for yourself when you're doing so much that adds to your personal brand and sort of leverages your career? How do you find time to just be you, not working?
Yes. So I actually transitioned from corporate America to being a full-time entrepreneur just 2 years ago, which is interesting, right? Because I wanted to leave corporate America because I didn't want anyone to micromanage me or be my boss anymore. So I decided to be my own boss. And now for every client that I have about 15 different bosses now.
Yep. And that's how that works.
Yeah. I don't just work 9 to 5. Now I work 27 hours a day, literally, and every single day. And I started to get really burned out as an entrepreneur because I realized that I'm doing my own marketing, accounting, websites, recruiting for interns, literally everything by yourself, copywriting, pitching business, developing the business, creating the proposals, executing the business, following up, sending invoices. It's exhausting. I started to get pretty burned out. And so I decided to say, you know what? I'm not going to work on weekends unless it's absolutely necessary and I'm behind. So I actually started to use productivity tools that have changed my life because it was difficult for me to keep on top of all of the projects that I was doing. Now I actually use Trello, the free version, and I write every single conversation that I have with every one of my clients. And now I'm not wasting time trying to say, oh, what did I say I was going to send over? What was that proposal supposed to entail? Now I'm much more efficient with my time and now I don't work at all on the weekend just so that I can rest and be with my family and actually go for a walk or a jog.
Yeah, absolutely. That was great. Thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you, Celeste. I think that was good. I think people will certainly take something away from our conversation, at least one thing.
That was the multifaceted, multi-talented Jai Vargas, multicultural marketing expert, LinkedIn ninja, and the Latinista. To learn more about her work, you can visit jaivargas.com. That's YAIVARGAS.com or thelatinista.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please share it with another woman who might benefit from some inspiration and some advice right now. The Conferences for Women is the largest network of women's conferences in the nation. They draw more than 45,000 women and men to annual events in Boston, Philadelphia, Austin, and Silicon Valley. You can learn more at conferencesforwomen.org. I'm Celeste Headlee, and this is Women Amplified from the Conferences for Women. Thank you so much for listening. Be kind and be well.